I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where I, community activist Alana, meets with psychologist Dr. Lauren to explore current and historical issues in order to disrupt current paradigms and offer restorative tools and practices.
We will be discussing issues ranging from gender parity, misogyny, shadow work, microaggressions, looking at our internalized conscious or unconscious racism. And at the end of the day, how all of this affects how we feel about ourselves and others, and so much more.
Welcome back, everyone.
Hey, how's it going, Alana?
Hey, Lauren. I'm good. What's going on with you?
Oh, I'm excited about today's show.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I remember what inspired this episode. And back before we launched, we were kind of having a conversation about misogyny. And my question was, what's the opposite of misogyny?
And I was just said, misandry.
Misandry.
That's a thing. Like, duh, that's actually a thing.
Had no idea.
Right.
Completely blew my mind. Nobody talks about misandry.
No, they don't. And you know, I really got in touch with it when I was writing my dissertation back in 2006 and 2007. Like, because I was doing all this research on misogyny. And what came up was, hey, there's also this problem called misandry. But it's hard to understand because men still have so much privilege.
Right.
And so we're so busy kind of trying to, you know, uncover and discard and heal and remove all of this privilege and create equality. But at the same time, there is hatred of men out there, specific hatred of men. We know part of that is what gave some feminist groups a bad name, is if they kind of focused on that. And then what happened was the movements that were against feminism grabbed that, grabbed the women that did really have a lot of misandry and used that globally to discredit the feminist movement.
Makes perfect sense.
Right?
I experience that till this day. A lot of women who could identify as feminists refuse because of
that
connection or that link.
Right.
Because they love men, they respect them. And I'm like,
they're same married here. To them, they have sons.
Yeah, I'm not anti
men.
And they're not the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
But yeah, you're right. In our history, there has been a lot of unrecognized or not dealt with that level of misandry in within the feminist movement, that I get it, that was really, they really held on to that. And other groups, other like main media.
Yeah, exactly.
They
yeah.
really embellished that part.
Right. And so part of our work here too is to just continue to illuminate and discuss and have conversations around these kind of topics that either are difficult to have or are invisible, like in this case, pretty invisible. And, you know, in hopes that continuing to have these conversations, raising awareness is going to help create a more enlightened world.
Absolutely.
Part of that collective movement that's going on.
That's so cool. I do wonder, looking back, if misandry is just a response to the patriarchy, to the unconscious misogyny, right?
Yeah, it's a good question.
A symptom of misogyny.
Yeah.
I wonder.
I wonder too, because it's not like when I was doing all of my research, I went that deep into the origins of misandry like I did with misogyny. So I'm actually not that qualified to talk about this in the depth, in the deep way that we like to. And that's what's why it's so exciting that we have our second guest today.
That's correct.
Yes. Will be joining us.
Yep. We are going to be introducing our guest shortly. He's so fantastic. I'm actually going to just share his bio with all of you right now, but he is an expert in this area and we're so excited to have him on this episode. So to jump into his bio real quick, Dr. Joe Court is a licensed sex and relationship therapist. He's trained in sex therapy and imago relationship therapy. Dr. Court specializes in working with sexual dysfunction, relationship concerns, and with individuals identifying as LGBTQ and presenting issues. He's the author of several books such as 10 Smart Things Gay Men Can Do to Improve Their Lives and Is My Husband Gay, Straight, or Bi? A Guide for Women Concerned About Their Men. He's also the co-director of Modern Sex Therapy Institute's LGBTQIA Affirmative Therapy Certification and the Couples and Sex Therapy Certification Programs. He also has a podcast called Smart Sex, Smart Love. To learn more about him, please visit his website at www.joecourt.com. And you ready to turn over to our interview?
Yeah, here's our interview with Dr. Joe Court.
Enjoy.
Hi, Joe. How are you? Welcome to...
Good. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm great. I'm so excited to have you on our podcast, The Consciousness Salon. And it just is so interesting how it just came about so organically. You know, we started doing research on misandry, and this fantastic article you wrote for Psychology Today popped up exactly on misandry. And I couldn't believe it because, you know, you and I are colleagues and, you know, we have a friendship even though we live kind of far away from each other. And I was so excited that I could have you come on our show and talk about it. It's a great article. It's called Misandry, The Invisible Hatred of Men. Men face many microaggressions that we rarely think about. And there's so many important points you bring up in there, including sort of defining what microaggressions are and then getting into how they're connected to misandry. So I just really want to let you talk about it. You're really the expert here, and just, you know, we might pop in with some questions here or there, but can you get us going, get us started on all you know about this and how you got into writing about this and all of that?
Yeah, well, I didn't really know what microaggressions were, and we can define that in a little bit, but I learned about them at a sex therapy conference, and it was an author of this book called That's So Gay. And for some reason, I'm totally blocking on his name right now. I'll look it up and I'll tell you, because he's a well-known author, and wrote a really good book about microaggressions against LGBTQ culture. And in it, I'm reading, it's very easy to read book. It's an APA-approved book, and he talks about microaggressions against LGBT, racial microaggressions of people of color, microaggressions against women. And then I'm reading the book thinking, okay, microaggressions against men? Crickets. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, how could that be? Then I went to the internet and I thought, okay, I'm going to look it up, microaggressions against men. Very little. And I started to get angry. To think that men are only seen as perpetrators or predators or whatever, committing the microaggressions, and that we can't be victims too, is ludicrous. So that sparked me to write that article.
Oh, that's great. So, you know, there's a couple things I want to kind of point in there, but do you want to sort of describe what you know for microaggressions and then what you know for, you know, what misandry is in your article?
Yeah, so, and that's another thing. A lot of people don't know this word. So I always say, what is the hate in my talks and everything? I'll say, what is the hatred of women? The word. And they'll say misogyny. And they'll say, and what is the hatred of men? And nobody knows it. And so then you even have to teach your computer on Word. It doesn't know it. So I just think that what's important is when I wrote that article, Misandry, The Invisible Hatred of Men, for Psychology Today, I really thought I'd get a lot of backlash. And I didn't, but I did get a little bit. I did get some, and they were mostly women, some lesbians, some feminists, saying to me, don't try to equate misandry with misogyny. And if you read my article, I don't do that. I would never do that. Misogyny is a systematic worldwide way of keeping women down, inferior, and we could go on and on about how it oppresses women. But we do need to be conscious of misandry, and that there are people that hate men, and there are people that hate women. And while women are hated more, we could make that argument, and it's true, it doesn't mean misandry doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And that's where I was trying to come from.
Right. Exactly.
Beautifully said.
Yeah.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much for that clarity.
Yeah, that's really important. And I think a lot of what you say, sort of from the collective perspective, is like hate hurts everybody, right? So, and you get into this when you get more into what, you know, the issues with the patriarchy, which of course we could go on and on and on about too, but you said, you know, the patriarchy, the way that it has hatred built into the system and the rigidity into the systems, and how that affects certain kinds of men is really problematic.
Right, because not every man fits a patriarchal mold. And if you don't fit that good old boy or whatever a man is supposed to look like or be like or act like, then you're not included in that fraternity either. So you're being left out and being treated as though you're invisible, even though you're a man too, is also very hurtful.
Right, and I think that, you know, men in those situations, because there's lots of men that don't fit this mold, right? I
Right.
mean, so many, they can internalize these messages, right? And feel bad about themselves and all of that as well.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I get that the struggle to understand misogyny continues and is huge. And I understand that there's a concern by some people and maybe some groups that think if you talk about microaggressions against men and misandry, that you're going to take away from. And see, this is the way our culture's become, and it's so upsetting for me to watch the world become so undifferentiated. What I mean by undifferentiated is, can we have differences? Can we think differently and not erase the other or have to erase myself or make one of us right and one of us wrong and one of us good and one of us bad? And it's really getting really, in my opinion, disgusting in the LGBT community where people are saying, you, the L, the G, the B, the T, you don't understand me, so you can't talk about me and we can't have a discussion. I think that's terrible. Then we're never going to move forward, and if we do, we're going to move forward as islands. We're not going to move forward as a community.
Yeah, we're going to continue to move forward really like broken and split off. And when you were talking, just like therapist to therapist, I couldn't help think about how this period of time there's so much splitting going on, right? Internally in folks, and then they're projecting that out onto others. You know, it's like there's so much fear and hatred going on, and then, you know, that gets split inside, and so you put all the bad on certain groups. Right? They're all bad. They're this, they're that. And like you're saying, there's no differentiation. There's not holding the nuances of everybody, right? And that all of us have good and bad qualities. And,
Right.
you know, and how important that is. And that holding the tension of that is really what we call in psychology being differentiated, right? Being individuated, like being able to hold those ideas that just because a certain group has qualities that's been oppressive doesn't mean it's all bad, you know. And I think this very either or thinking is very dangerous, and we're right in the middle of it, as you said.
Yeah, Lauren, and I appreciate you saying that because that is a constant conversation within the community. And thank you so much for that, Joe, because in the end, how dare we continue to be, if we're really trying to be a part of a larger collective and unite and be stronger together, we cannot continue to oppress one another or stand in opposition of one another. So this is a really important conversation, and Miss Andrew's part of it.
Yeah, exactly. And we keep having the conversation. That's what we're really doing a lot on our podcast, Joe, is to keep having these conversations around how that happens within the LGBTQ plus community, or within the feminist community, or, you know, in the dominant cultures, what have you, right?
Absolutely. And the problem is that I know that people are territorial, like, and I am too. I'm a minority myself. I'm a gay man, and I have very strong feelings about what that has been like for me and what that is. But it doesn't mean that and I may not understand another perspective from another group that's experiencing microaggressions, but that doesn't mean I'm not willing to listen to it and understand it. And that's what people are missing out on. And so when I saw that people, and so I just have, and I've always worked with men, male clients. My clientele has been largely heterosexual and largely couples and heterosexual couples and largely males who have experienced sexual abuse, out of control sexual behaviors, and sexual orientation issues and different things. So it just made sense to me that I started realizing a lot of men, I have this line I always say, this quote, when men have one non-heterosexual thought, they're stigmatized.
Mm-hmm.
When women have one non-heterosexual thought, they're fetishized.
That's right.
Both suffer, but women have wiggle room to work around their sexual orientation issues. Men have nothing. And I some of that's misogyny, some of that's misandry.
That's right. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think that this conversation is so important because we really do want to create space and talk about those kind of men, gay, straight, bi, fluid, what have you, who don't fit into this very rigid patriarchal idea of what a man is, you know, sort of these action figure types in these movies, for instance, you know, someone. And what I think is really important that you discussed in your article from Terrence Real's book, I Don't Want to Talk About It, Overcoming the Secret Legacy of Male Depression, it's what a big piece, and you could say more about this, is that when boys and men are granted this privilege, there's a condition that they turn their backs on vulnerability and connection to join in that fray, right? And that,
yes.
I think, and that those who resist, like unconventional men or gay or bisexual men, are punished for it. And I think that's a big part of what you're talking about today that we're dealing with, is that there's also these marginalized men or men who are acting as if they're somebody that they're not, right? Because of what the patriarchy forces men to be.
Yes, I agree with that. And I love Terrence Real has gone on. He continues his work today, and he says, what we do is we hollow out little boys, and we fill them with privilege and entitlement, and then we shame them as adults. So what we do, we stop touching little boys earlier than we stop touching little girls. We teach little boys to stop touching each other. There's no permission to have any kind of physical contact unless it's sports or violence or, you know. And then he has no access to an emotional vocabulary. And then he grows up into a man, and then people shame this man. Why are you like this? And in therapy, we end up helping them get closer to being able to communicate to their female partners who have always had access and permission to speak emotionally. The problem is that's not all that we should be doing. We also need to be helping women partners understand where men are at too. Not instead of. When I teach this, people are like, wait, are you saying instead of? No. Men need to catch up to women, yes. And can women also take men for where they're at? And that's a hard task.
Why is that such a hard task, do you think?
I think people think it means we're going to erase what's happening to women. And I'm not, I can see that could happen and that people are concerned about that, but we don't have to let that happen. It's certainly not my agenda. My agenda is to let both sides exist. Let's really have a differentiated discussion. I don't know. What do you guys think? I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Well, first of all, I really appreciate how you keep holding the space for misogyny and the movement for women's equality. And obviously we're not there yet at all. And globally it's, you know, really scary. And I think for Alana and I, because we talk about women's equality and LGBTQ plus issues all the time, for us, just having this conversation is great. I don't feel that it's pushing us out.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'm not triggered by it
at all. That's a good way of putting it.
I welcome
the conversation, right?
I really do. I mean, and I agree with Joe in that it is necessary, and there's space and there's room for it as well. And it's all within context, right? As he mentioned. I mean, this is about unification.
Yes, and it's about realizing that the systemic oppression that this world has built all globally, but in the Western world and so on, is harming everyone. And I think that if we don't try to hold space for healing everybody,
correct,
in the ways that it has harmed them, including men,
exactly,
then the healing is not going to be as effective.
I mean, we experience this with our younger brothers.
Yes.
Right? So this is a very important piece that we're touching on, Joe. that Dr. Joe, that Lauren and I have a very special place for.
Yeah, I mean, and really, like, for instance, one of our episodes, because of just kind of what you're talking about, we talked about transphobia, and then we got into the transphobia within the lesbian community. Now, we haven't gotten any backlash, but this isn't like a popular topic, right? And we went back to, you know, way back to like the 70s when it was really bad, and we went into some historical pieces there. And we also talked about these TERFs that are still around, these lesbians that, you know, and, you know, won't accept trans women as, you know, at all, you know, and it's filled with kind of hate and aggression and, you know, so we want to keep having these. Alana and I both believe there is space for everybody to have the conversation of how things are hurting them or harming them or affecting their sense of self or their ability to feel internal freedom or, you know, and I know that this affects every human. And it's for these different various reasons that we're talking about today.
Yes. And that's what I was so drawn to you about when meeting you at that conference, because you have a differentiated mind and you are willing to listen to both sides. And what's happening in our culture is if somebody has a bad feeling or an uneasy feeling, then suddenly they label it as, I feel unsafe. And now you are victimizing me because I'm unsafe. And, oh my God, you're not unsafe. We're just having a conversation and you're not having a good feeling about parts of the conversation. We can work through this. But once someone says they're unsafe and identifies the other as a perpetrator, the conversation's over.
Right.
What are you going to do?
Right. Yeah, that's really well said. And then the conversation doesn't happen. And the person goes, you know, away with their same belief system, not having the openness or the curiosity or the questioning to allow new ideas to come into their consciousness.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
could you explain TERF? Because I don't know if your listeners are going to know what TERF is.
Yes, it just means trans exclusionary, essentially. They are definitely a group of lesbian women identified feminists who I believe it stands for trans. What is it? Feminists. I have to look it up now.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you on.
No, it's okay. It's not.
It's okay. I'm gonna.
We
look
are
it
so
up.
Used to using, but it's the T is for trans, E is for exclusionary. Radical feminist. That's what it is. It just took me a minute to see the whole name.
Yeah, trans exclusionary radical feminist. You got it.
TERF. So this has been an ongoing conversation that Laura and I have been having. But regardless, we are noticing these types of, you know, small hateful narratives and groups, you know, along all communities. And we just want to make sure that we're calling attention to it and calling it out, because hate is hate is hate, in my opinion. So, yeah. So I'm glad that we're taking a look at it from a different perspective in terms of men. And I really appreciate you addressing the root of it, right? And how patriarchy and other systems are impacting our young boys.
It's really, really awful. And, you know, when I go to the airport and I'm waiting for the planes, women are sleeping against each other, each other, brushing each other's hair.
Uh-huh.
A woman could say to another woman, I need to use a restroom. Do you want to come with me? If I turn to a guy and say, I got to take a leak. Do you want to come with me? People laugh at me, right?
Yeah.
And then let's say the guy says, sure, I'll go take a leak with you. When women enter the bathroom, they can have all kinds of conversations. You're basically passing notes underneath the stalls talking to each other. In a men's room, there's all body noises and no talking.
I've always wondered about that. I have.
Right, right. It is. It's the bro code is you don't talk. You're not
the bro
code.
And so, is there kind of some tension in there too, or no?
It's not really tension. People are relaxed because they feel safe that no one's talking to me and no one's looking around at me, and so it's not like that.
Okay.
But even that we have to call it bro code, or, you know, the whole idea of man bun. Can't it just be a bun? Romance. Can't you just have a romance with another guy? Why does it have to be, we have to make sure, like women can have romantic relationships with each other, but when men do it, it's bromance, man bun. We have to reinforce the male part, you know?
Yeah,
that sounds homophobic.
It sounds very homophobic.
I think that's a good point. It probably is.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of yeah, there's a lot of like nuances in terms of the internalized homophobia in that as well.
I agree. I think that, yeah, it sounds very homophobic.
Like romantic. I mean, we could be friends, but if it starts to sound more like it's crossing over,
it's not platonic.
You know, yeah, more than platonic. Exactly. Right. So it gets, yeah. How do we honor platonic intimacy
between men without everyone freaking
questioning
out that, you know,
their sexuality, etc. Yeah. All fair points.
I think it's really important, too, because from a relational perspective, you know, right there is all this conditioning to be anti-relational. And I don't mean just with men, but in general, because it's not safe to be relational naturally, right? And so, and then you realize that, and you would know this more than I, but that's just kind of the thought I had, is like how this would affect men on multiple levels, because of the way that you're supposed to be with each other.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
So say more. What do you mean by that?
Well, when you're not allowed to be natural in a relational way with men, there's all these bro codes, there's all these barriers, there's all these guards. Then you're going to internally create guards inside of yourself just to function in the world, right?
True, that is true. Yeah.
And then how can that not affect, if you are, say, a straight guy, how can it not affect your relationship with your significant other, other women, even your sisters or your mother? I mean, you know, I'm just thinking how your children, you know, how it could just have such a larger impact.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. Like if you're creating patterns of guardedness, or, you know, being guarded, or not just being not as open, right?
Yeah, you can't be yourself.
Emotionally connected with folks. That's going to show up in all areas of your life.
Right.
Yeah. And this idea that Terrence Real was saying, that you're conditioned to turn your back on vulnerability and connection. Like, and then that's going to affect everywhere. And then, you know, when, you know, for instance, you have relationships with some men that are close in your life, and you want, you know, you want to be closer to them just as friends. And there's like this unavailability. I've definitely experienced that in my life, in my own life, in my family and friends. And it's like, you know, this like guardedness. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. I think that's exactly what happens. And so then what happens is couples come into therapy, straight, heterosexual, now we're calling them mixed sex couples.
Okay,
right?
Mixed sex couples. That's great.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Okay. I love it, right? Instead of saying heterosexual, because they might not be. But so you have women in my office saying to me, wait until you hear my husband out. He's dead inside. And I'll say to her, well, what's he like when he watches sports or plays sports? Oh, my God. He comes alive spitting and screaming and all over. He doesn't sound dead in sports. What's he like at work? Oh, my God. Running around the country, PowerPoint presentations, very passionate. Men have four ways to emote permission: sex, violence, work, and sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up so that. And it's not right, and it's not fair. And men, I'm not saying men don't have a responsibility to learn themselves how to emote and verbalize themselves in other ways, but we don't teach boys how to do that, so we shouldn't expect men to automatically know how to do that.
Yeah, definitely not. And then I think once you're an adult, you know, there's the help of having a prefrontal cortex and a wiser mind, hopefully, and things like that that can help you learn new behaviors or, you know, kind of work on these guards and all of that. But it's definitely a process, right? Once you're an adult and you have these ingrained behaviors and there's only four ways you're allowed to emote, you know, it's like
Right. Learning
how to emote in the other ways, it's going to be a process. And they have to be motivated. And I think you touched on something here, because each of us are responsible for our own growth, right? Our own individuation process. And, you know, to hopefully, you know, grow as much as you can and become as wise a person as you possibly can in this lifetime. But that also, there's, you know, each of us need to be motivated to do that. And not everybody is, obviously. Some people are very motivated to do that and some folks aren't. Yeah. And I think with the way that men are conditioned to have. Those four things are what is acceptable to have excitement around and pleasure and put your energy in. When you say, hey, let's work on your psychology, well, that's not in that those four categories, right? Let's work on your trauma. Let's work on healing, you know, the damages you've had from whatever.
I am curious, though. I do wonder, though, that the men who've been able to successfully conform to society standards versus the ones who simply
don't fall in that category.
Yeah, yeah. Who just simply don't or can't. It's just not authentic. Joe, do you find have you experienced that those men, the ones who don't fit the social norm or standard, being more open and willing and wanting to learn and seek therapy and emotional support system, et cetera, resources?
You know, those are the men, of course, that I would see in my practice. And it's usually, though, I have to be honest, at the duress of a female partner who says, you're going to have to do this or I'm going to leave. And I know that there are men that want to wake up and have those experiences. There's actually a really, really good workshop for men. It's the gold standard of workshops for men. It's called Mankind Project.
I knew you were going to say that. Dr. Joe, yeah, I love you for saying that. I was going to bring that up in this conversation, but I'm glad you did. That just makes my heart so full. I have so many men in my life who are involved with Mankind Project.
Well, and what it is, you know, men get worried about it. So it's Mankind Project, mkp.org is the website. And they get worried. It's a men's weekend workshop. Yes, there's Native American sort of beating drums and hugging trees. And people get, well, I mean, that's not Native American, but some spirituality that are new agey. And people are turned off by it. Native American isn't my intersectionality. My spirituality isn't, to hug a tree. And they get distracted by that. But the reality is, it's about our relationships with our fathers, our relationships to ourselves as men. They used to have this thing as I was growing up as a male. If men look into each other's eyes too long, they're either going to fight or they're going to fuck.
Right.
And so this workshop teaches you how to look into another man's eyes without that kind of fear or worry or agenda, just being able to be with another man. It's one of the best programs out there, I think.
Oh my gosh, that's great. Have you done it?
I did. I did it in 1999. Ah. My animal name, you get an animal name, you choose your own. I'm Powerful Bull. And it was so helpful to me because I grew up, I really had my own kind of gender dysphoria as a gay little boy because I didn't talk the way my mother and my family thought I should. I didn't walk the way I should. They were always trying to turn little Joey into a man. Ugh. Don't sit that way. Don't talk that way. And so they made me depressed about being male. Ugh. And being really, the truth is why I'm so drawn to the whole misandry idea is because I come from a misandrist family.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still my name is still Joey in my family. I'm still seen as a little boy because to see me as a man is it's too threatening for my family members. And so many of them, we've had to part ways because they cannot tolerate me as an adult male. They need me to act like little Joey, and that's not who I am. So that's why I went through the Mankind Project and why I write these articles.
God, that's such a good point. You know, I'm sure there are so many families like yours, right, that cannot tolerate an adult man and infantilize their adult male sons or brothers or cousins or what have you. And yeah, but when you do the work like you do, Joe, then you start saying, well, you know, I can't be in relationship with you if this is the way you see me. But can be a painful process, don't you think?
Yeah, very painful, very difficult. And men, I'm going to say this, and I think men are taught this, right? Men aren't there to support each other through it. So that's why the Mankind Project was so important to me. There was a group of men suddenly that wanted to support me to be a better man. And it's hard to find men, unless you're into sports or you're a good old boy and you're in the patriarchal thing. But if you're not, you're really left on your own.
Right.
And I believe that to teach somebody to be a man, it has to be another man.
Yeah, that, oh God, that makes so much sense. And in this enlightened way, though.
Yeah, not that there's some predefined way to be a man. Now, let me just say something. Patriarchy also hurts women in that a lot of women are so coded, even though they hate patriarchy and they hate what it's doing to them, they're attracted to patriarchal men. And so there's been research now that shows that women are turned on more by a patriarchal guy than they are a non-patriarchal guy. How do you like that?
Yeah, no, that doesn't surprise us at all. I don't know. We did a whole episode on internalized misogyny and just talking about how, that seems to be one of the symptoms, right? Is when you have internalized all these messages that who you are as a woman is not good enough, not valued, demonized, what have you. Then it's very easy to put all your attention onto like a patriarchal man as, and it also gets you access to the privilege as well, right?
That's so key. Thank you for saying that, Lauren.
Yeah, so I think it's the two
Access
pieces.
is, yeah, and that's been systematic, right?
Yeah,
That's, we've been watching that
that's
from a,
thousands of
yeah,
years.
exactly.
Thousands of years
Yes.
that that's been going on. Right. And yeah, I mean, it doesn't surprise me. I remember when I was at Antioch and we were deciding on who was going to be one of the speakers for the graduation. And one of my colleagues said to me, well, and I swear this stuck with me till now. I mean, he said, people prefer men's voices. We should pick a male speaker.
Was that a woman who said
No, a
that?
man.
Oh, a man said that.
A man said it, but I know it's not in the, but it
Wasn't
just,
sure.
it so struck me. And I was just like, what? Like, is that true? Like, it confused
You're like, according
me.
to which statistics and who did the
Yeah,
study?
where's that study? And I want to, but I also was like, well, in this patriarchal culture, like, anything's possible. Like,
Right.
women are going to prefer male voices and men are going to prefer male voices. I don't know. I mean, I just, it was really,
Yeah.
that was not a fun thing to hear,
Sure.
But anyway, go ahead.
I
Yeah.
did want to just make sure that we did just make it clear to our followers what a good example of internalized misandry is, what that looks like. Joe or Lauren, would either of you, Joe, would you be interested in kind of sharing with our listeners? Lauren and I have been doing a lot of internalized topics, and we wanted to definitely continue in that way. And we're wondering if you could share with our listeners an example of what internalized misandry looks like. Would that be?
I'd like to hear that from you. I think you're more expert. You have more expertise around that. I'd love to hear that.
Well, I think we kind of touched on it a little bit, just going back to when you internalize these messages that there's only a certain way to be an acceptable kind of man, right? These are the criteria, right? You look like this, you act like this, this is what you do for a living, this is so on and so forth. Those who fall into that category don't necessarily have that much internalized misandry, but the men that you're saying that are outside of that category, which are many, right, can internalize these messages that they're not good enough, they're not doing it right. Then they might have an inner critic that's going to kind of vary, can be very nuanced too, right? Go after them inside of their own mind of the things that they're not living up to. And
At the sports car,
yeah, may,
whatever.
right. Or maybe they're not like I in your article. I think this is a really good example. They're not into sports, right? So you're out of that club, right? And then it's not as valued. Maybe you're,
Meaning they're not valuing themselves, right?
yeah. And
That's
then they
part of
don't value, but then they
that
have a hard time valuing themselves because they're not living up to what's
social
expected.
standards.
Or, to use your example, your family continued to treat you like you were a little boy, or you were that little boy that they were trying to change, and here you are
Yes.
growing up. You differentiate from them and you're like, okay, well, but you had to kind of work on that to get away from the way that, you were conditioned and then treated, and perhaps the messages that you internalized around the way you were treated as a little boy.
Yes, right. And then to go with a new paradigm that didn't necessarily fit in with the people that loved me. And
yes,
then I loved back, you know?
Exactly.
I'm clapping for you and all your courage.
I know, me
it too. Makes, it makes my heart full. You're so courageous.
Joe, it's just, no, it's so great to hear your story about that and going to this Mankind, you know, weekend and doing this work, differentiating yourself from it. And then, you know, doing what you need to do, like distancing yourself from people in your family that, you know, are not going to, you know, are going to continue to be challenging or not treat you well, right?
Well, and here's the thing. People might say, well, Joe Court, you've just been talking about differentiation. You don't sound very differentiated with your family if you had to, like, part ways. I didn't part ways. And I think people, you do end up having to part ways after multiple discussions over many years, over many times, and you get nowhere. Over time, then, and that's what this younger generation isn't doing. Mm. They're not willing to put in the time and the energy and the hard feelings and the bad feelings and all of it. Before and putting whatever they need to do for a while to see if they can make headway, because that's really how relationships grow. But many relationships where people don't want to grow, they can't grow. So then you do end up sometimes having to leave, or you tolerate a bad situation.
Right, and maybe minimize the contact if it's really a bad situation. Right, that's one way to deal with it. But
yeah, that's another way.
Yeah. No, I think it is differentiated to walk away from a toxic relationship that you know is no chance of changing. I think that's self-care.
It's self-loving.
It's self-loving. I think that would be.
I agree.
Yeah. I think
it's very self-loving. And, you know, to Joe's point, the younger generation, so to speak, they are kind of wired in the instant gratification world. So taking the time to really look at themselves, do the deeper work. So, you know, I've met a lot of youth who are very checked in, plugged in, doing the work. But on a grand scale, I'm not sure. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
It's hard to say how committed they are to doing work that's going to take much longer than just reading a book. Or, you know, reading a quote on Instagram. You know, it's hard to say.
Well, I think there's that quote, you know, everyone's called to kind of wake up, not all.
At the same time. Or,
well, no, not all in general. Heed the call.
Oh, got it.
But all of us are given multiple opportunities.
Multiple.
To you know, multiple bottoms, so to speak. Multiple where you just fall apart or whatever you're doing, you know, isn't working anymore. And you have that opportunity then to really do the work, do the inner work. So this has been such a great conversation with you. Is there anything else that you'd like to add around this topic? And I know you have another area you might want to talk about briefly.
Well, just that I've learned a lot. When I do my talks around the country, I always ask for people to shout out different examples of microaggressions against women, and then I ask them to shout out different microaggressions against men. And I've learned so much about what happens to women. You know, like just the idea of the pink tax, right? Right, that your feminine hygiene products are taxed much higher, haircuts are higher, cleaning is higher, clothes are more expensive and made less durable. I have learned. I could go on and on of things I've learned that I had no idea. But people, when I then say, what about microaggressions against men, the room becomes crickets, and I have to start them out. And I'll tell you what I experienced. My sister had 4 kids, and for 16 of those years, as they were little kids, I was with them every Friday night. And so we'd do sleepovers, we'd go to Target, we'd go to movies, we'd have a blast on every Friday night, and I would take them out to dinner every week. And about a handful of times this has happened to me, where a woman comes up to me, I don't know her, she looks at me very nicely and warmly and says, isn't this nice that dad is babysitting his kids and giving his their mother a night out for herself? What a,
right.
I mean, it's really a covert form of misandry, but if a father, first of all, I looked at all these women and said, first of all, I'm not their dad, I'm their gay uncle, so they would be mortified, you know what I mean? And then I'd say, well, why would it mean I'm babysitting my kids? Can't dads want to spend time with their children and give mom a night out, just like women, mothers do? Those kinds of things they're important conversations.
Oh, it's so important. I'm glad you brought them up, because that's a really good example.
It is a good example, and I like everything. I think that things that come out like that, it's because historically men have, I'm curious about statistics and what that looks like culturally, if, and I think that's where we have to kind of demystify.
Yeah, and continue to keep talking about this. And it's so great that you are talking about this, Joe, in your work, because not a lot of people are. And
And it's unacceptable. The microaggressions are just simply unacceptable, regardless of their experience. Of those, maybe that particular woman has her personal experience, right? Or maybe the men in her life who might be unavailable, right? As he mentioned, emotionally unavailable and disconnected,
Yeah, well, and she's just completely merged with
and
the
she's
patriarchy.
projecting.
And she's merged with the patriarchy. I mean, she's like asleep walking around. Sorry.
Yeah, but
They
she's
all,
also projecting her own stuff and her own experience onto Joe.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's really
So.
important. Well, thank you, Joe. And was there anything else you wanted to touch on today? I know you've got some other.
Love microaggression talks, by the way. Great job.
Yeah, no, I think we did a really good job talking about them. And people don't understand them enough. So, and as much as you can get it out there, the better.
Yes,
Well,
exactly.
we're also going to link your article with how you've listed all the microaggressions in various communities on our episode as well for folks to have access to.
Right. And
Oh, thank
also the
you.
Mankind
Project.
Project one.
Yeah,
My.
MKP. I will
Yeah.
also add that.
Yeah. I want everyone to be able to go and look that up. And
They have a Her Weekend as well.
oh, wow. That's great.
Yeah.
They have a what weekend?
A Her Weekend for women.
Oh, yeah, they do. Yes, they do. Women Within.
Yep, they have one coming up actually.
Oh,
Oh,
wow.
that's awesome.
Yeah. I
Sounds great.
actually
Okay.
tagged you in it,
You did?
Lauren.
I
Anyway, we're getting off track. We're getting off track. I'm so glad you brought it up though, Joe. I really do. I appreciate it. The men in my life who have gone through that process and journey are just so special to me. So.
Oh, and that's another thing. A lot of men get worried they're going to become soft males, they call themselves. Like, they don't want to
Soft
be a soft
males.
male. That's what they call it. That women see them, you're too soft for me. I need somebody more dominant, more alpha, more. And it's such an unfortunate set of words and terminology. And it doesn't make you any kind of male. It makes you more of the male you are. It brings
Right.
out your, that's all it does. There's no agenda for what kind of male you should be.
It helps you get in touch with your authentic self, right?
Right, which
Yeah,
is,
so
yeah,
you can be
right.
who you really are
Yes.
and remove all these layers of conditioning and persona and fakeness and
And
all
be
of
a
it
whole person
and be a
for
whole
once.
person. Yeah.
And the men who are saying that are too attached to their identity around patriarchy.
Yeah.
And that is
Yeah, right.
problematic.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that. And
Yes.
this is a big journey.
Yeah.
Multiple generations.
So
But
many.
thank you,
Yes.
Joe, for all the work you're doing to
Thank
just
you.
we appreciate you.
wake up the
Yeah, thanks
world.
for having me on.
Oh yeah, it's been just such a pleasure to have you, and I hope to connect soon.
All right. Thank you. See you.
Bye, Joe.
Nice chatting with you.
Bye.
Have a great day.
Bye.
You too.
Well, that was incredible, huh?
Thank you so much for inviting him onto the show. I'm so glad you two met. It feels really synchronistic. Is that the correct
Yeah,
word?
that's the,
Synchronistic
yeah.
or what's the other word?
Well, it is. It's synchronicity is when things connect, sort of, it seems random, but it's not random. Is that the right word for you?
That's a good word. There's so many words that are
I
coming to
love
mind.
synchronicity. I mean, I just love that word because it's like it can happen a lot. You're just like, wow, that all sort of fell together really well.
You two are definitely two peas of a pod. Two peas of the same pod.
Know.
Yeah, he's definitely a kindred spirit. I'm so appreciative of his time and his expertise on this. So, yeah, thank you everyone for listening in to our interview with Dr. Joe Quartz. And please leave a review, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you have any questions, please email us as well. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram,
And yeah, and all the pod on all the
platforms.
platforms that have podcasts.
Yep. We have
Yeah.
our Linktree bio as well on our Instagram, so you can go there to locate your favorite platform to listen.
Right. And if you're inspired, we'd love for you to subscribe and leave a review on what's now called Apple Podcasts. I'm still getting used to it, so I'm just like, you know. And we would love to hear your comments. And if you have any questions or suggestions, please do email us. Stay connected.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks, everyone. Till next time.
Thanks, Lauren.
Thanks, Alana.
Bye.
Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine. And I have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.alanaroshay.com. That's AlanaRoshay. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as well. This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.